Good morning, everyone. The topic this morning is beauty. And it occurs to me it's a beautiful day to talk about beauty. I want to start with a reading. This is from Diane Marie Child. I quote her a lot, so you've probably heard that. Form is the language of the universe singing its praises. Its rejoicing is seen everywhere. In the sun, through a web of hair. In the flower and its petals. In the subtle folds of a garment. In the human body. I watch the fog swim over the fir trees in the morning. The fog brings a lushness to the forests. It dripped from the moss clinging to the trees. It fell from the sky like a soft rain. When the sun burned through the fog, its rays sparkled through the spider webs that hung on the bushes and fences. I watched the deer forage for food in the backyard. I spent hours walking along the beach, enthralled by the gray winter ocean. A few inquisitive seals swam along the shoreline, keeping pace with my movements. Flocks of gulls preened on the beach, undisturbed by the solitary woman walking quietly by. There is beauty all around us. Can you find time this week to notice the universe singing its praises? This idea of the importance of beauty and bringing beauty into our spiritual lives was first made known to me several years ago by a Russian teacher with whom I was studying Raj Yoga. And I remember clearly the night she said to us, "You must bring beauty into your lives. It's important on the spiritual path that you include beauty." And I remember feeling sort of affirmed and, in a way, a sense of relief because I knew I loved beautiful things. And I loved things like the ballet and symphony and good plays and wonderful art. And she listed some of those things. And it was like, oh, it's okay. I wasn't being indulgent, you know, as my life was simplifying and I was clearly on a spiritual path. You know, I wasn't sure if it was a little indulgent to love going to the ballet. But I see now what she meant. I see the importance, the value of having beauty. It's a theme that I've used a couple of times with the women at Elmwood. These are women that I assume probably haven't had much beauty in their lives. And I teach mindfulness. I try to give them something to pay attention to, you know, as sort of homework each week. And a couple of times I have used beauty. So one time I just suggested they look for the beauty around them. You know, oh yeah, right, in jail. But they did. And then another time I suggested they look for the beauty in each other and in themselves. I think it was easier to look for it in each other because they talk quite readily about that. And I was really pleased this Friday when a couple of women gave clear examples. One woman talked about her walk from the dorm to the laundry in the mornings at 7 a.m. And she noticed the air on her skin and how fresh it was and the sky and how fresh she felt as she took that walk to the laundry. She was alone, and I thought that was really lovely. And she also mentioned a sunflower that that grows in a particular spot in the garden. And somebody else was mentioning, oh yeah, the yellow flowers that are over here. Another woman talked about noticing a pigeon with a long piece of straw that he was carrying, or she was carrying, to the nest. And it really pleased me because, you know, I'm quite sure these are the kinds of things that these women have not paid attention to before in their lives. And they are beginning. They're beginning to see the beauty in each other and to see beauty where it is. I think beauty, like so many things in our practice, we can both cultivate, and the awareness of the appreciation of beauty naturally arises. I think it comes as we look more deeply, see more clearly, see more deeply, and develop an acceptance for all of life. When we do that, then we begin to see the beauty that is inherent in everything. And perhaps our ideas of beauty begin to change. Certainly mine have. I think of a time that I was riding with a friend and noticed a pond with algae growing all over it. And I said something about, "Oh, look how beautiful that is." And her reaction was, "Ugh, yuck." One time, several years ago, I watched a documentary on Rwanda, the civil war in Rwanda. And of course, there was death and destruction everywhere. And at one point, it showed these dead bodies in a courtyard. And I had the reaction that this was beautiful. And I can't explain it to you. I can't tell you in words why I thought that was beautiful. It was an inner arising. It just arose. But the very next day, I saw Gangaji, who has been a teacher of mine. And in a small group, I mentioned this. And she said, "Yes." And I said, "But I wouldn't tell anybody else, and I'm not sure I have, except here." She said, "Of course not, because the chance for misunderstanding is so great. You know, you don't just go out and say, 'Oh, what a beautiful scene, these dead bodies.'" But there was something of beauty in those bodies lying in the courtyard. At the same time, of course, there was the horror of death and the destruction and what had happened. Probably all of you have had the experience, as I have, of seeing someone whom you thought was not physically very attractive, and then getting to know that person, know them really well, and at some point it dawns on you, "Oh yeah, I don't even see the physical characteristics anymore. This person is beautiful to me." And of course, the physical characteristics haven't changed. But when we get to know the person, the inner person, he or she is beautiful. That always amazes me when it happens. And I was thinking, you know, when we bow to each other, we're really bowing to that inner beauty, to the essence of each other, to that divine spark, Buddha nature, if you will, which of course is inherently beautiful in each one of us. So why is it important to bring beauty into our lives, to put our attention on beauty? Several reasons. I think it's inspiring. I have found just over the last couple of days, thinking about preparing for this talk, that I have felt sort of like when you do metta, loving kindness, you know, this lightheartedness, this wonderful feeling, just remembering and thinking about all the beauty and all the different ways I see and appreciate beauty. It brings joy, it brings calm, it brings peace. And I think for me, it also brings a change in how I see things. Wayne Dyer, who is on Channel 9, was last night, says, "When you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change." And that's my experience, that as I look deeply, as I look more closely at the true nature of everything, people, things, algae, dead trees, That reminds me, there's a spot on the way down to Monterey that I see every Monday as I drive. I still drive to Monterey every Monday. And there's a section where there's dead trees, dead wood in water. It's almost like a petrified forest. And I found that my eyes are drawn to that every day. It's unconscious now. It's just I know where it is, and as I come around the corner, my eyes are looking for it. It has a distinct beauty. It's not what we would normally say, you know, look at a beautiful picture or a garden and say, oh, isn't that beautiful? But it has come to be really beautiful to me. Another reading. Beauty Way. The Beauty Way in Native American teachings is the way of balance, of living in harmonious relationship with all of life. The harmony and balance we seek is within us. We are born with this knowing. There are many reasons this harmony is lost to us through our racial, cultural, and gender experiences. The times we live in seem particularly difficult for reestablishing this harmony. Yet we can take great comfort and joy in Dhyani's words. The quality of our laughter and joy, the knowledge of our voices, thoughts, and actions are weaving beauty around the land. Wherever our lives take us, harmony is there inside us, waiting for our discovery. Expression of this inner harmony creates balance and beauty in the world. Our knowledge, our thoughts, and our actions count. We can make a difference. Awakening and bringing forth this natural harmony in the world is a responsibility that each of us shares. This is not a burden. Creation and transformation are delightful tasks in which we may all take part. I find that focusing on beauty inclines the mind. I like that term, inclines the mind towards the beauty. It helps to get away from the judging and the comparing mind. I've had such a strong comparing and judging mind. And it's been really useful to, as I say, really look deeply and closely and begin to appreciate the differences, the unique beauty in each one of us and in everything. Another example, I saw when I was walking over at Elmwood on Friday, tumbleweeds. We don't see tumbleweeds too much in this area, but there were a couple. And tumbleweeds, many years ago, became very special to me. I went to high school in the Southwest in New Mexico. And at prom time, we didn't go to big hotels like kids do now. We decorated the gym. Well, there are many tumbleweeds in New Mexico. And so one of the things we did was collect tumbleweeds and spray them, some silver and some gold. And they decorated the gym, you know, on prom night. When we walked in, it was like a fairyland. So even though that was 40-some years ago, I never see a tumbleweed that I don't think of that. Tumbleweeds aren't brown to me. They're silver or gold. Driving up to Yosemite, you know, a few years ago, there was a really large forest fire. And again, the first instinct can be, oh, how ugly, all these burned dead trees. But then on second looking, I can see the beauty. You know, they're all different shapes, they've gone all different ways. You can see spots where the fire missed, where there's still some green or some brown. I think the burned forest has its own unique beauty. And of course, when we remember that it takes a forest fire to, what is it, spark the redwood, what are they called? Whatever, anyway, to grow new redwood trees, then we can appreciate the value of the fire and what it leaves. Zen practice puts a lot of emphasis on beauty, although I don't know that they necessarily speak of it as beauty. But everything is done with so much attention and so much care. Everything in a zendo is beautiful. It's very simple, but very beautiful. Spirit Rock, I think, is the same way. Spirit Rock, to me, is so beautiful in its simplicity. It's that elegant simplicity. So by inviting and appreciating beauty, we begin to see beauty everywhere. We see things not through our judgmental eyes, not through our comparing mind, but through the eye or the mind of equanimity, which sees everything as it is. Beauty and grace are performed whether or not we will or sense them. The least we can try to do is to be there. This is from Annie Dillard in the commentary. Annie Dillard, in her daily walks to Tinker Creek, showed us how to truly see. She took the time to look, whether it was at a spider, a bird, a flower, or a tadpole. She stopped and she looked. Beauty is happening all around us. Can you take a moment this very day to stop, breathe deeply, and look? Even if you live in the city, look at a tree or some flowers in a window box that you pass every day on your way to work. Take a minute to observe them. Do it every day for a week. Notice what feelings or thoughts arise in you as you practice deep looking. Is there a time when no thought arises? Can you see simply the color and the shape? When the mental conception quickly arises, can you notice it and come back to the color and the shape? So we see that it becomes a process. We look for beauty. We put our attention on beauty. We look deeply. We look more clearly at everything around us. We accept what we see. We accept life as it is. And everything becomes beautiful. When we change the way we look at things, the things we look at change. So I'd like to invite some of your thoughts on beauty, your experiences, how beauty has manifested, perhaps, changed in your lives, what you've seen when you look deeply, when you see things clearly and see them as they are.
Maybe you could elucidate a little bit more on beauty with regard to bodies. That's a startling thing. I also can understand that it could just be a curious and private view, but rather than that, you saw something that you just didn't give any more explanation, so you might have to get that through.
You know, it's something that I find really hard to put words to, really hard to explain. I suspect it had to do with the acceptance of things as they are. Death is not separate from life. Death and life are part of being. The bodies themselves are beautiful, as all bodies are. When we don't overlay that picture with thoughts and ideas about this war is terrible and how awful that people are killing each other and you know, the whole story of how it came about, etc., etc. Just the bare experience, just the raw picture of these bodies was beautiful. Does that help?
Yeah, I guess what I'm recognizing when you say that is, as I would look at them, and the manner in which they die, I would probably have a hell of a time separating that. Whereas looking at the dead bodies, I would possibly see some regularity. That separation is much easier.
Yes, right, right. I think that's what it was. I think it was just a moment of that bare attention, you know, that bare scene. They were just bodies, and as just bodies, they were beautiful. It certainly wasn't something I thought, you know. I didn't think, oh, this is beautiful. It just arose from inside. Yeah, and for that moment, I think, there wasn't the story of how it happened or what was going on or who was right or wrong or any of that. It was just the bare experience.
Yeah, it was a blessing.
I mean, it startled me as well, you know. Yes?
You reminded me of a saying that has stuck with me for years now, upon hearing a tape from Thich Nhat Hanh, and I'm not sure of the sequence, but it was without the garbage, there is no rose.
Yes.
Right. That there is the beauty in the book. And I kind of take that to a distance of what you're saying of bodies as well. You know, our view of God is different than our view of the rose, that they're one and the same.
That's right. That's right. Yes, I heard that from Thich Nhat Hanh many years ago, too. And forever changes your view of garbage, doesn't it?
And the rose.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Mm-hmm. You had your...
Like the gentleman over there, I was also intrigued by your earlier example. And are you making the statement that physical beauty is morally neutral in the sense that we should abstract away the larger picture and context from physical scene and focus only on its physical attractiveness and attributes?
That's a big one. I'm not saying should to anything. I think beauty is morally neutral, yes. I'm suggesting, actually, that we look deeply, that we go beyond the surface appearance of things. You know, we're so conditioned in our society, in any society, really. Any society has ideas about what is beautiful and what is not beautiful. And the saying is really true, that beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. You know, we can see that clearly with each other when somebody likes a particular painting and somebody else thinks it's awful. Or somebody thinks this person is really beautiful and somebody else thinks not at all. Obviously, each of us has a little different sense of what is beautiful and what is not, although there's some cultural agreement. But I think what our practice asks us to do, and what Thich Nhat Hanh says so clearly when he talks about the rose becoming garbage and the garbage becoming the rose, is to look more deeply, to look beyond the superficial, to look beyond our conditioning and see people, things, events, everything at their core, to see them as they are, to see the, without all the story, without all the overlay, just the bare noticing, just the simplicity of anything or anyone as it is. Does that make sense? It's sort of a paradox in a way. I realized this as I was thinking about it, that I'm talking about beauty and suggesting we bring beauty in our lives, and ultimately what I'm saying is there's no difference. So we focus on beauty, this happens a lot in our practice too. We put our attention on beauty, and ultimately it fades because beauty becomes everything. Everything is inherently beautiful. Everything has its own beauty. And beauty then loses its meaning. It's not a value. It's not a description. And for me, that's the beauty of it. When everything becomes beautiful to me, that is joy and that is freedom. When my judging, comparing mind can stop and just see differences, just see diversity, just see uniqueness, wow, that is so much more pleasant, so much more joyful than critiquing every single thing. And of course, the mind still does it. I can see the conditioning in myself. I go out for a walk in a residential neighborhood, or anywhere really, and my eye is drawn to, you know, a perfect landscape, a garden that is perfect, because that's my conditioning. But when I really look, I realize that the overgrown, the mature garden is really in many ways preferable to me. I really enjoy it and appreciate it in some ways more because I know and I've experienced where I live. The perfectly manicured garden has cut off, you know, a lot of blossoms before they were ready to be cut off, has sheared off bushes or whatever, so they're perfectly straight. It's totally unnatural. You know, it has probably pulled up plants that were dying or turning brown long before their life was really over and planted new plants in its place. And it's not natural. It's not, you know, just arising. But my conditioning is so strong that my eye automatically goes for what I would term the perfection, you know. It's not perfection at all, but that's how I've been conditioned. And the freedom from that, you know, the freedom not to always judge things and assume that some kind of straightness is perfection is very pleasurable to me. Anybody else?
Where I live, it's very beautiful, and people don't drive much faster than about 60 miles an hour. And I recently had the opportunity to drive through Illinois and Missouri, driving a van 75 and 80 miles an hour, trucks on all sides of them. And I was really pleasantly surprised going around big cities, St. Louis, Kansas City, and even here around the airport, but to see all of the new structures of freeways and the curves of them and the way the light shines on the cement and what seemed to be perfect engineering and how beautiful the light was shining on the gray curves that went, you know, for miles just to get around something. And coming from somewhere where it's beautiful, usually when I get in a car and start driving, I start feeling compression all around me and a density in the air. And it was really, well, I was glad that I didn't have a lot of aversion, and that as soon as I turned this one curve on one of the highways, all of a sudden there was just gorgeous bridges the way they were all formed. And I had this sense of how beautiful.
Yeah, that's a beautiful example. Candle comes from Hawaii, where it is beautiful. But that's a wonderful example, because it would be so easy, certainly for me, to see all the concrete and have the aversion, think how ugly, oh, yuck. And to have it reframed, to have you put it like that is very nice. Yeah. Yes?
Acceptance is a simple thing that makes it easier.
Mm-hmm. See the beauty of it. Yes. That's right. When we have love and acceptance, there is only beauty, isn't there? But that can be challenging because our conditioning is so strong to judge, to criticize, to compare, to evaluate. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Well, I was growing up, I grew up in the Detroit area. When I was young, I didn't know people made jokes about it. And I thought, you know, when they take us to the Fort Bruce Industrial Complex, which is 5 square miles, we won't go into the talks of waste anymore, but it looked impressive. It was so impressive. And I thought it was really beautiful at the time, my innocent child mind, but you know, as I grew up and learned about things, I was ideas about it, it got really ugly, you know, and stayed that way. And only recently I read a book by William McDonough, and I haven't really seen it because I've been back there, but I guess it was redesigned and now supposedly birds nest. That's hard for me to believe, that's what I thought. But, and maybe there's a certain beauty to it, or maybe even if he hadn't done that, you know, I don't know, I appreciate it. But this kind of shows you how you start with that innocence and all these ideas coming up.
Right.
Not to mention all the jokes about Detroit, too, and all.
Yeah. So that's a process, too, isn't it? Where in your innocence it's beautiful, and then you realize what it's all about, and it becomes not so beautiful. And then the next step, again, is to go back to the beauty, but this time not with innocence, with understanding, but seeing clearly, seeing it as it is. Anybody else? Yes?
Can you reread the passage you read earlier on in your talk about form?
Form is the universe singing its praises. Diane Marie Child. The book is called Open Mind. It's a book of daily readings.
Is that the first one that you read?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The specific quote is, "Form is the language of the universe singing its praises. Its rejoicing is seen everywhere, in the sun through a web of hair, in the flower and its petals, in the subtle folds of a garment, in the human body." Form is the universe singing its praises. Form is the manifestation of the universe. Yes?
I'm reminded of something I learned about called paying attention and blindness. It's in the field of psychology. And I experienced this first one when I was in a conference where they showed a video of two teams of people playing basketball, dribbling. We were asked to count the number of dribbles by one of the teams. And then everyone was asked, how many dribbles? Of course, that wasn't the point of it at all. They said, well, now, and we were told just to look at the people with the black T-shirts. So that's the attention we were directed towards. And so they played the video again. And they said, now don't just look at the people with the black T-shirts. Look at everything going on. Expand your awareness. And it was the same video. They rewound it and played it again. When they played it this time, someone dressed in a gorilla suit danced through the middle of the basketball dribblers and went like this, and then went off. Everybody said, "No way." It's a different video. No one in the room, hundreds of people, saw the person in the gorilla suit. And they've done many different experiments like this of other sorts where things were changed and no one saw it because they were asked to focus on a certain thing. And this came to mind for me as you speak because the point is that we are aware of what we focus on, mm-hmm. what we pay attention to, and that awareness and seeing as a conscious choice. So seeing beauty, sometimes we can miss it when it's right there, mm-hmm. going like this.
Yes, yes, I like that. Seeing clearly is a conscious choice. Mm-hmm. And somehow what you say reminds me of, you know, how in the cracks in cement or macadam, little weeds or little things will grow. And again, my conditioning, you know, to have everything just so. My first reaction is to pull it out. And of course, I used to. And now I've noticed that is still my first reaction. I don't do it anymore. The second reaction is, oh, wow, you know, look at the tenacity of life. Look at how life pokes up even here, even in this crack.
The Japanese refer to it as wabi-sabi, the things that are imperfect. And they often create works of art that have these natural imperfections.
Yes, lovely. Anybody else? Yes.
One of the parts of my practice that's been difficult is taking care of my cat. Cats are naturally carnivores, so I give them chicken wings and parts and burgers and things like that. And yesterday when I was eating my breakfast on the picnic table watching my cat chew one of these bones, suddenly I just saw this flash of all just white teeth, white strong teeth on this bone that she was chewing. And I just had never seen her quite that way, seen it quite that way. And for that moment, it was quite startling. And sometimes I see little nubs of bones left over the next morning in a lot of pine needles and things. And there's lots of these little salivas and everything. How do you know it's like a party? There's something about happiness in seeing that.
Yes, yes.
I had a few people yesterday at art process, art class, and I'm interested in how, and at the end they looked, they did it, but there's this initial disconnect of, and almost shame comes up for people with the making, with art making, as if the art is outside, not within me. But maybe speak to it a little bit, this externalizing beauty. And in some populations, and children are much more eager, and will go right in, you know, take that risk. But it's curious to me that I can't do it, it's separate from me. And it takes a while to get to the place of, oh, this is in me all along. I can make this, almost like a spider spinning its web. This came from me.
Yes.
And I think that perception being active versus passive is somehow related.
Yeah, I think there are so many pieces to that. One thing that comes to mind is so often as children, as very young children, we got told this was pretty or this was not pretty. Somehow our work was evaluated. And for many people, many of us stopped drawing at a very, very young age, believing that we couldn't, because there was that external evaluation of what was produced, and there wasn't a sense that it came from inside, or that if it did, there was any value in that. It was only, you know, what was on the paper, or you were supposed to draw a specific thing. You know, we're all going to draw a bird now. We're all going to draw a tree now, and then it was evaluated in comparison to the tree that we were shown, not, you know, what came from within. And so I think very early on we learned to judge things like art by a certain standard that has nothing to do with what it might be expressing or how it came out. And that's probably true in many, many ways for a lot of us, that I know it's really only in the last few years that I have learned and continue to learn to live from the inside out. And I can look back now and see how much of my life was taking ideas from the outside and imposing them on my life and trying to make my life that way. I was never encouraged, you know, to see what came from inside, to live the life that wanted to be lived through this body. And I have to say it's been a real challenge and at times excruciating to learn to change that, to learn to live from the inside and let go of all that external putting on to me what I should be. Yeah, thanks.
This conversation you had reminds me of another sort of classic drawing book, Drawing on the Red Side of the Brain, that talks a bit about one of the hang-ups people have is that when you're, say, trying to draw a person's face, we all think we already know what it is, to draw a little eyes and a nose and mouth. But that's not really what you're seeing.
Yeah.
And it tries to help you get less from what you think a person looks like to what you're actually really seeing in the moment. And then you can actually really let go of what you should be and what you've told your stories about. Person is a stick figure with long set of legs, start to really see what's really there when you're talking about the color and the form, then just sort of find that everybody has the ability to kind of really be present with in a mindful way of what they're really experiencing, what they're really, as you're saying, coming from inside out, but an external expectation of it.
Imposing, yes. Okay, let me close with this reading from the prophet on beauty. Where shall you seek beauty? And how shall you find her unless she herself be your way and your guide? And how shall you speak of her except she be the weaver of your speech? The aggrieved and the injured say, beauty is kind and gentle. Like a young mother, half shy of her own glory, she walks among us. And the passionate say, nay, beauty is a thing of might and dread. Like the tempest, she shakes the earth beneath us and the sky above us. The tired and the weary say, beauty is of soft whisperings. She speaks in our spirit. Her voice yields to our silences like a faint light that quivers in fear of the shadow. But the restless say, we have heard her shouting among the mountains. And with her cries came the sound of hoofs and the beating of wings and the roaring of lions. At night, the watchmen of the city say, beauty shall rise with the dawn from the east. And at noontide, the toilers and the wayfarers say, we have seen her leaning over the earth from the windows of the sunset. In winter, say the snowbound, she shall come with the spring leaping upon the hills. And in the summer heat, the reapers say, we have seen her dancing with the autumn leaves, and we saw a drift of snow in her hair. All these things have you said of beauty. Yet in truth, you spoke not of her, but of needs unsatisfied. And beauty is not a need, but an ecstasy. It is not a mouth thirsting, nor an empty hand stretched forth, but rather a heart inflamed and a soul enchanted. It is not the image you would see, nor the song you would hear, but rather an image you see though you close your eyes, and a song you hear though you shut your ears. It is not the sap within the furrowed bark, nor a wing attached to a claw, but rather a garden forever in bloom and a flock of angels forever in flight. People of Orphalese, beauty is life when life unveils her holy face. But you are life, and you are the veil. Beauty is eternity, gazing at itself in a mirror. But you are eternity, and you are the mirror. So may our appreciation and cultivation of beauty be for the benefit of all beings everywhere. May all beings walk in beauty.